You're listening to the Trekmate Family Network.
The Battle Bridge is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com.
Worf, Solus, Sue, report to the Battle Bridge. I'll join you in a moment.
Ensign, secure connector levels.
Aye, sir.
Crusher, Carteno, Gleason, report to the Battle Bridge.
Mr. Data, Mr. Worf, I have a special mission for you.
Note in ship's log that at this start time, I'm transferring command to the Battle Bridge.
You're listening to The Battle Bridge, a TNG podcast where we discuss everything about Star Trek: The Next Generation. Tonight's episode is Clues, and I'm Blair from Ontario, Canada.
And I'm James from London.
And I'm Lou from Nebraska. Blair from Canada. How's it going up there, bud?
It is going well, thank you.
All right. And you're still part of the EU, right?
No. We are not.
Have you ever been?
No. As James and I usually like to discuss, we talk about our Commonwealth partnership and, you know, close ties.
Okay.
But that's it.
All right. Well, since everybody is brokenhearted over the Brexit, does that affect Canada at all?
I don't think so. I didn't follow it closely, to be honest, but no. I don't think we're impacted from our end.
Okay. Right. And this is our second show back from Las Vegas. James, how are you doing still?
I'm doing good. It's been a long time, you know, prior to these two shows that we've recorded with Cena and Blair. It's been a long time since we spoke. Mm-hmm. I think it's been, you know, about a month since we've been back from Vegas, and it doesn't seem that long ago, but it also seems longer ago in some respects as well.
Right.
So
okay,
I'm just a delusional man.
All right, and Blair, you're still a medic up there, right?
That I am. So I'll be doing that till I'm dead or retired, whichever comes first. So
right, paramedic, right?
Yes, that's correct.
Great. So are you allowed to give drugs for people you think have a stroke?
We don't have the thrombolytics yet. Some paramedic services are in a study, like a trial. However, we're not at that level at this point in our community. We just take them right to a stroke center from where they are, which could be, you know, 45 minutes to an hour away.
God. Wow. So,
Let me just step in here, Lou. Whenever you ask questions like that, I always think you're asking as a complete ridiculous joke question.
Oh no!
And Blair always answers in a very professional manner, and I'm just sitting here like open mouth gobsmacked for this conversation.
Because it's fun when Blair comes on. I just have to do something like that. So my guess is
I think you're always trying to trump him.
Oh, never.
You're going to stump me one of these days, let me tell you.
No, I doubt that. So basically 15 liters O2 open wide, right? All the way.
Well, now there's evidence to say that they don't really want you to give high concentration oxygen. It's a big debate whether you just give low, just, you know, so you're not causing further damage to the brain. Every so many years, the literature changes on certain treatment when it comes to oxygen.
Definitely.
So.
And since I don't have you on for the rest of the season, I don't know when I'm going to be able to ask this question, but have you ever used, have you ever countershocked V-fib?
Have I ever countershocked V-fib?
Yeah, I imagine you have many, many times, right?
Define countershock.
Oh, okay. Did you?
Because maybe we have a different terminology up here.
Oh, okay. Did you?
Hey, Lou, you know, I don't reckon that Blair's really a paramedic.
Yeah. No. The reason why I'm asking is, okay, somebody in VFib gets the paddles, right?
Well, someone in VF is usually dead, but yes, so they would get
shocked.
Yes,
exactly.
Ventricular tachycardia, you can be alive with, and I've shocked somebody who's alive with ventricular tachycardia to slow their heart down and get it back to normal.
Right, much lower shock rate. But I'm curious, does the body really jolt up like that when you shock them? Or is that just TV?
No, absolutely. We in where we are, though, it's because you're in an ambulance, you don't have the paddles per se. That's just too dangerous. Oh. They're stickers. So you literally apply the stickers, and they're almost impossible to get off. So if you have a hairy chest, you usually have to shave them. Yeah. Those stickers go on, and the pads go on, and they don't come off very easily. But yes, the body certainly jolts.
Really? I thought that was just TV type stuff. Okay.
No, and it certainly jolts when they're alive, and you have to shock them. And then if you don't give them any pain medication ahead of time, they don't like the feeling. It hurts.
Yeah. Like French kiss on a light socket real quick. Okay. Good enough, Blair. That was our medical question for the day. Perfect. Don't worry. I'm sure somewhere along the line we're going to have some schooling too. So you're not going to get out of the woods yet. Just yet, Doctor. Okay. Well, it's good to have you on, Blair. And as soon
Well, it's good to be back.
Great. And as soon as I copy and paste what I should have done about 5 minutes ago, you can continue on reading. There you go.
Certainly. Well, why don't we get into the synopsis of this episode?
Excellent idea.
So the crew of the Enterprise wakes up after apparently passing through a wormhole, finding mystery surrounding their blackout. Data begins to act suspiciously, prompting the command staff to wonder if he has been compromised. This is the 14th episode of season 4 of Star Trek: The Next Generation. The original release date is February 11th, 1991. It is written by Bruce Arthurs. The teleplay is by Joe Minoski, and it is directed by Les Landau. The guest stars tonight include Pamela Winslow as the famous Ensign McKnight, Rhonda Aldridge as Madeline, who apparently can't say communicado very well.
Cacado.
Patty Ustick as Nurse Alyssa, and apparently she doesn't have a last name at this point in the series, and special guest star Whoopi Goldberg as Guinan. So, what do we think about this episode? I know for myself, it's one of my favorite ones. This, to me, and I haven't seen this episode in a long time, but it brought back great memories of watching TNG way back in the day. It was, a nice classic episode. Not usually a big fan of bottle shows, but this one certainly was a good one. And just watching it just reminded me of watching it way back when I was in high school, and it was just a good episode. I thoroughly enjoyed it. Lou, what do you think?
I do too. I really like this one as well. I love the mystery. The holodeck activity was fun, and that's usually not very good. Even next week's holodeck. Shut up, Lou. Even last week's holodeck activity was just as fun. So good two shows in a row. The holodeck did not go bad. I love the mystery. I love Data as the bad guy trying to explain his way through his lie. And the crew piecing it together. And it all comes down to Diomedian scoured moss. James, what about you?
So I think I've mentioned before that I started watching TNG, and I started watching TNG when I was like 12, 13, something like that. And I do remember episodes like this being kind of the bread and butter of what was shown. So I have very strong memories of having seen this in, if not first run, at least on the kind of the chunk of TV that I used to watch during the early 90s. I think that this episode is an example. I think there are others in season 4 and season 5, but it's an example of how when TNG becomes this kind of really well-oiled machine. And what they're doing is that I don't necessarily think that they're pushing out kind of huge classic episodes that are going to be in the top 10 of all episodes ever, but they're pushing out at a very, very high level a lot of stories that are kind of smaller stories or stories that are encapsulated off on their own. I think we've had this with, we were big fans of The Wounded, and I was a very big fan of Data's Day. And there's a lot of stuff in the season four so far, even, that is very good run-of-the-mill episodes. And I think Blair mentioned about this being a bottle show. Again, you know, they don't fire phasers. There's no new aliens per se. There's no new scenes external to the Enterprise. It's just a great little kind of mystery show that they've probably managed to film on a couple of $100 and a bunch of pizzas for the production staff. Having said that, I think it's wonderful. I really do. I really like it. I think that Data is very good at it. Data is, you mentioned, I think, Blue, you mentioned he was quote-unquote evil, but he's not evil. He is Data being Data, but you just happen to be on the opposite side that we're normally on. Mm-hmm. So instead of him being Data and him wanting to inform you, he's Data and he doesn't want to inform you. So I had a lot of fun with this episode. I think it's very typical of season four. A lot of fun without necessarily being kind of one of these big tentpoles of a show that has a lot going on.
Okay, all right. Okay then, so let's see. What would the episode have been like had Data said that everyone was unconscious for approximately 25 hours?
Well, I think it would have been less likely for them to investigate as much.
The 30 It'd have been seconds over. Yeah.
Or a minute thing would have been... I just kept thinking, I felt they explained the... they said, how come my beard didn't grow? And I buy that. They were all put in stasis or whatnot. But I don't know if you ever walk around your house, you know how many clocks you would have had to have reset it, just to put it back and... you forgot the clock in the bathroom or you forgot the clock in the basement. And it just seemed that it would have been easier just to say, hey, we've been out for that long. And and then that could have explained, the whole Crusher issue when she put everyone through put that one girl through the transporter or whatnot, which for Crusher to come up with would have been nicer for O'Brien to come up with that solution. But yeah, I think the 30 seconds or whatever was a little... not great.
Right, because what on earth was O'Brien doing when he fell? He wasn't hanging a clock for Keiko. And mysteriously, when I woke up, it was 25 hours later. Something strange. But yeah, obviously, the show would have been 10 minutes long had they said we were out for 25 hours. Mm-hmm. Just enough time to do the holodeck. That would have been it. Which I also have noticed thing about Star Trek The Next Generation is when they go on the holodeck, any beginning of the story has a direct impact on the rest of the story, or at least correlates to the rest of the story. Okay?
No, I agree. Although I must admit, I know there's some people on the UP2 podcast that kind of indicate that they can't stand it when they mentioned the name of the episode in the episode.
Yeah.
And I don't know how many times they said clues and over and over and over. It was a little too much, but still it was good. The only concern I had was Guinan played no role outside of the holodeck. It would have been great had she, why couldn't she have been the one that got possessed? That would have been probably a little more interesting, but outside of making a Star Trek action figure for her based on that episode, she didn't do anything else, which was a little disappointing.
That's a good point.
I don't know. I mean, by the way, this episode was apparently written by a fan. Submitted a script and then it got the teleplay was put together by one of the guys on the right and stuff. But it did come from Fanville, and there's a part of me that watching it kind of thinks that the Guinan stuff was added on at the end so that they had, they had the story about clues and they had the story about, this idea of a mystery. And I can't help but think that someone would have said, if we include a little bit of Dixon Hill at the beginning, that would tie into the story or they'll thread into the story. Mm-hmm. And then they went, oh yeah, great idea. And what should we do? Oh, maybe we can get Guinan on the holodeck. And I just felt that the very, very front bit in Dixon Hill was really just them trying to pad out the episode.
Mm-hmm. Well, like Blair said, I mean, he even mentions it. Now we have to search for clues. And remember last week, I mean, the devils do thing, and what do? At the beginning of the episode, we're on the holodeck playing out Ebenezer Scrooge. You know, well, you've never known fear, Data, but you're about to observe some. So anyway, that's what I was thinking. Not important, though, as they say. So we complete a mission early, and a few officers decide to take up some hobbies. Now, I could see Riker, Troy, and Geordi in the hand-waving, foot-kicking class, but Worf? And what's funny is it's actually Worf's program.
Yeah, but that makes sense. So Worf is doing his kind of Klingon warrior, kind of keep himself in shape kind of exercise routine. Mm-hmm. And others come along because they admire his physique.
Well, who doesn't? But there's no killing. There's no blood.
I think that comes later.
It's the calmer side of Worf. His inner, inner calmness.
Okay. All right, so now we get to the main part of this episode, and that would be the Diomedean scoured moss. And I hear it's not easy to cultivate. What the hell is Diomedea? Well, we don't know what Diomedea is, but what's scoured moss? What is all that? I'm not an ethnobotanist myself. Anything, guys?
No, no clue on that one. Just the trope of the show.
Maybe it's just weeds. Your average weed. That's what it looked like.
So you think it's Crusher's personal stash?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And that's why Picard was so happy to see it. Ooh.
Now, do you think that when they put everyone into stasis, and they obviously forgot to put this into stasis, there are other things that also probably should have gone into stasis as well, right? Like, Spot should have gone into stasis. I wonder whether or not they remembered to put Spot into stasis, or whether Spot also would have shown an extra day's worth of growth.
Okay, I think I can even come up with one better. There's over 1,000 people on that ship. They're not all on duty at the same time. Sometimes people are off duty. And what do they do off duty? A lot of things. So are you saying that all the people had to think about all that they were doing and go back to that exact moment in time and then wait for them to be passed out again and then wake up again?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Okay.
Again, I'm willing to look past some of these things, like, because you could pick this whole episode apart on many aspects, but I'm willing to give that a pass, even though you're absolutely right. All right, O'Brien, get back up on the chair. It's...
Do you think there was a guy that... So where were you? I was in the shower. I said, you weren't. You're on the toilet.
Yeah.
Can't I be in the shower? Said, no, get back on the throne.
Captain, I was on the toilet when I passed out. How I ended up in the shower, I don't know. We need to question Data. Okay. Well, that is just funny. So, so what about Worf's wrist? They shouldn't have fixed it. They should have kept it broke. Or no, I guess, no, because it wasn't broken. Yeah, they had to fix it. But obviously, Dr. Crusher is again showing her incompetence not to fix it right.
But, I think, Blair, when you mentioned at the beginning, I'm sorry, you're out for 24 hours. Oh, and Worf, you took a bit of a heavy fall. That's all you needed to say in order to explain the wrist.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, there are very few people on board who could broken a wrist, and Data's one of them.
You know, you could have had Worf, because he broke his wrist from the alien, put him lying down behind Captain Picard's chair at an odd angle. Uh-huh. At least that way it would you could argue that he had a bad tumble, and that's how he broke his wrist somehow. Just a bad fall.
Right. But since there are very few people who could break his wrist, who are the other people?
I didn't buy this from Worf at all. I think by this point, he was looking for evidence to pin on Data. So at this point, Data's already guilty, and he's saying, oh, I've got a broken wrist. I'm sure it's only Data who would be able to break my wrist. Mm-hmm. And Picard's sitting there thinking, I'm pretty sure I could take you, Worf. And probably Troy could on a good day, too. And then, of course, later it is Troy that it manages to break his wrist.
Possessed Troy. Better than regular Troy.
I'm not convinced she was possessed at that point. I think it was slightly afterwards.
Okay, so that's her normal voice, huh? Well, that's her excited voice.
Well, as you see later on, Worf's wrist deserved to be broken. The way he just jumped literally a foot in front of her with a phaser up in her nose. He deserved to be disarmed and have your wrist broken.
Right. Okay. But, okay, so which is better? Possessed Deanna or Paul Wraith Keiko?
Oh, definitely Paul Wraith Keiko.
Definitely. So definitely.
What? Hang on a second. No, I like Possessed Deanna. Possessed Deanna is wonderful, and this isn't the last time she's going to be possessed, right? She's possessed within a year in Power Play, which is fantastic. I think Possessed Deanna works very well, and I like it that her accent changes. And she does, yeah. You can tell that when she originally auditioned for Star Trek, she put on an accent that she then almost immediately regretted having chosen. So she's had this kind of trying to get out of it for the last 15 years in real life or whatever it's been.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I love Possessed Deanna. Possessed Keiko is also good, but
yes, but which is better?
I think she did much better in Power Play than she did in this one. But that being said, it was a much longer episode in which she was possessed by, or for.
I mean, that's true. And maybe I'm thinking ahead of her in Power Play, where she takes no nonsense. This one's a rather like laid back. For a group of aliens that are supposed to be xenophobic and want to destroy everyone, they didn't feel that threatening. There's nothing really that Troy does. They seem calm, collected, and almost have a, you know, they seem to have ambassadors.
Let Troy get dressed when she was in her pajamas. Yeah. She gets dressed and comes to the bridge. I think if they were courteous aliens, she would have came in her nightgown. So.
Yes, because we
don't know
seen
how many times they forced her to change.
No, we don't like that one. Try again. Because we've seen her 90s have been rather, I don't know, transparent sometimes, it seems. Okay. Let's see here. I forgot where I was. Oh, let's talk about the holodeck stuff, by the way. Let's go back into Dixon Hill. What do you guys think of all that? You know, where's my money? I thought Guinan was absolutely terrific in this. Your money. You stole his money? I like that part. I thought the holodeck stuff was really cool.
I thought it was really funny. That being said, Madeline is just, I don't know about her. Because all those gunshots and the bullet holes rip through the window and embed in probably the wall next to her. Yet she doesn't hear it and come in. To investigate, but I guess she must have been on the phone or something. But
right.
I thought it was funny. I thought Guinan played it pretty good.
Yeah, I made note of that. The bad guy gets mowed down by someone outside the windows. Bullets and glass flying everywhere, and when the phone rings, you hear it. Dixon Hill, private investigation. Captain Picard? Sorry, there's no Captain Picard here. That was awesome, and you could see both of them looking out the door, and Picard's like, God, good God, God. So, why don't you try down the docks? There's ships coming in and out of there every day.
It also tickles me that they try to convince the guy that he's her cousin. And later on he goes, you're not fooling me, you're not cousins. And that just tickled me. Mm-hmm. I like that. In the same way they pretend, Data is French at some point.
from Brazil or something. South America, was it?
He's from Brazil in the holodeck. He's French when it's in Time's Arrow. That's right.
Yes.
Yeah.
French.
And the way that the innocent holodeck characters kind of like accept it and kind of nod along, it just tickles me.
Yes, but what does he look like? A Jamoke? He ain't nobody's cousin. You know, so she's Gloria from Cleveland. And she was supposed to be on the holodeck at 2 o'clock, but it took her a little while to figure out exactly what to do with these. Okay, good job there with the legs. Let's go on now. Okay, so a T-Tari type star within a pocket of a Nagami cloud. Doc, school us. What does he mean?
Oh, don't be ridiculous. This is made up. All of this made up.
So T-Tari.
I mean, I think it's made up.
A T-Tari type star isn't real.
Well, not as far as I'm aware.
Well, you're getting off easy today. You are getting off easy today, damn it. Okay.
Apparently there's actually a Wikipedia entry for T-Tari star. Interesting. Nope, it is real. I've never heard of it.
Really? Tell us about it. He hates it when I do this, you know. So, Blair, do you guys have Labor Day up there?
We do, yep, on Monday.
Okay.
You guys must do May Day, though, right?
Yeah, we do. It's May, we call it May 2-4 weekend, and that's the Queen.
For the Queen?
Yeah, I think, yes. May 2-4. Is that her birthday?
No.
Oh.
In May, we get a holiday in May.
Okay, so America or the US gets Labor Day in September, and everyone else gets May Day, or most of the rest of the world gets May Day at the beginning of May. And I thought they were supposed to be the same. But I'm surprised if Canada manages to get both of them, then...
Get a holiday in August. We get our first Monday in August, first Monday in September, which is Labor Day. We get Canada Day.
Mm-hmm.
We get... Oh, God. Yeah, and we get May 2-4, we call it. Hold on. It's Victoria Day. Victoria, not Queen Elizabeth. Probably one of your queens, Queen Victoria, many years ago.
It is strange that... You guys celebrate her, and we don't.
Anything for a holiday.
Fascinating. Yeah. Queen Liz was born on April 21st. And according to the Lou Trek show's news from the future, that was like several hundred years ago. Okay.
And we get Boxing Day, which we had this discussion the last time I think I was on. So, yeah. Did you get Boxing Day, James? I can't remember.
Of course. Yeah. UK have Boxing Day.
Okay.
Okay, so what did you discover about the T-Tari?
Oh, I've stopped reading. It seems to be a star found near a kind of molecular cloud, and it's identified by its optical variability and strong chromospheric lines, of all things.
Mm. Everybody got that? Boy, I'm looking at the Canadian holidays. This is interesting. Islander Day, Lewis Real Day, Heritage Day, Family Day, Leap Day, St. Patrick's Day, Good Friday, Easter Monday, Mother's Day, Victoria's Day, Father's Day, Aboriginal Day.
Yeah, but that's for certain provinces. Some of them are national. Some of them are only provincial. So anything in blue is because I'm looking at the same list you are, is a national holiday.
Mm. And so that you don't have to wait from Halloween to Christmas, you get Remembrance Day.
We do.
How nice. And then, of course, after...
Hang on, you guys get Veterans Day in the U.S.
Yes. Yes. And then after Christmas and before... New Year's, that's when you get your Boxing Day. Isn't that fun? A lot of holidays to take off. Well, you don't, you know. Okay. Yeah. You get to work no matter what. Let's see. Let's go past the T-Tari type, but it has a single star, or a single planet within the star falls within the M-class range, so, you know, they have to go check it out. Let's do. But that's when they get hit with that wormhole. Knocks everybody out for 30 seconds, except for the ship's computer and the ship's portable computer, also known as Data. But then we cut to commercials. So,
by the way, do you think that the Enterprise probably should have, like, CCTV?
Because I know.
if they had CCTV, it would be pretty easy to validate or not. I suppose, had they had it, then all they would need is the scene of it kind of all, you know, graying out and getting interrupted. But
yeah,
it's one of those things, right? They don't film what's going on. So it'll be forever a mystery.
Mr. Worf, pull up the surveillance tapes. Well, Captain, after we passed out, it goes fuzzy from there until we wake up.
But I took a video on my iPhone, and look what we did all for the last day.
Yeah. Right, yeah, there was a crew person that was FaceTiming at the time and passed out, and it kept going, but nobody realized it. Oh, there's a lot of things that would make this story absolutely come to light, just like Data. Do you think if I was a xenophobic race, am I going to be satisfied enough that Data won't say a word to anybody?
I thought they gave in a little too easy myself, but
no way, because you figure once Data is taken over by some entity down the road, which he will be quite a few times, he'll spill the guts. Or 25 years down the road at Riker and Deanna's wedding, maybe I wasn't that long, but somewhere down the road, you know, at their wedding, he says, "This reminds me of the time that we were all unconscious by the Paxons, and I fooled you."
or ask them why they didn't get a wedding invitation.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, what do you think would happen had Data actually spilled the beans someday?
Well, you would think if he spilled the beans, he probably would have indicated how serious it was and told them just to avoid it or they would be destroyed. It's just not worth it. And
yeah.
Carry on.
But we're such crazy explorers that somehow the word of the Paxson would have went somewhere and some crazy eight ball would have wanted to go see him just for the fun of it. You know, kind of like Annika Hansen's parents. All right. Anyway, so our thoughts on the teaser so far?
It was one of a longer teaser, but I did enjoy. I guess for me, and I've mentioned it before on shows, I love episodes where the whole crew is involved. So it really got everyone involved. Everyone, we saw what they were doing, and everyone came together to solve the mystery. But it was a long teaser, but it was good.
Okay. Okay, everyone wakes up to find they were out for approximately 30 seconds, and everybody seems fine. Ship systems are looking ducky, and we find out that Data has passed through 3 unstable wormholes in his time. So, I don't know. I guess a question is, they don't really answer, did the ship just all stop right there, and let's work this for the next day while we reconfigure everything, or did they continue progressing? They say they came out of it somewhere else, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, I think they probably kept going, and then they had that full day to get everything all worked out while they were traveling to what would be where they would end up.
Mm-hmm.
Was my impression. I could be wrong.
Okay. But I did forget to mention one thing, that Worf's wrist. He kept playing with it. Every time the camera passed in front of him, he grabbed that wrist. Deanna was a little bit unfocused. You know, maybe she feels guilty over hurting somebody or something. But then we realize we have that M-class planet. What do? Do we go back? But Data has a suggestion. You know, it was a bad idea. Why don't we send a probe? That'd be better. Okay, so let's continue on with life.
No, so I like the way that, I mean, I think on first watch, I didn't you're obviously not expected to cotton on to Data acting suspiciously until kind of much later in the episode. But then when you do rewatch, of course, you do see Data kind of like blocking pretty much from, you know, from minute one,
mm-hmm.
as soon as he wakes up the crew. So I think it's quite nice in that respect.
Right. Knowing the story now. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, and also you effectively revisit, you know, the very, very first couple of you know, post-waking sentences get revisited right at the end as well, which is very nice. And they're pretty much played exactly the same, but there's so much more tension at the end, which I think it's very good that they've been able to put that into context. So something that is very kind of innocent at the beginning and you accept it straight away becomes, you know, there are huge stakes at the end as they play through exactly the same lines.
Mm-hmm. Except for, you know, now that you know the story, when you go back and watch it, and Picard says, there's still that M-class planet we were going to investigate, Data's eye automatically looks up like, oh, here we go. You know, it's a possible, because this is clearly not a Class M planet. And, you know, it just, he tries to bluff his way out, and it seems to work, and it would have worked if it wasn't for the Diomedian scoured moss.
But you know what? They didn't solve that problem in the episode, did they?
You can only assume.
That would have been another 48 hours old.
Well, I think they obviously scrapped the moss, and then just before they got knocked out, she went back and reseeded new stuff, and you can only assume that's what happened. But there's too many things that, you know. Okay, I'm gonna give another bit of my future notes. What about the fact that the rest of the universe is now at least 2 days ahead of them?
Okay. Again, I think that's one of those ones you have to look past.
No need. It's fine. You can, you know, you're being shoved through a wormhole. You're going to come out the other end. I think that they mentioned a bit of time distortion. I think that's fine. With a lot of people traveling around the place, there's going to be a lot of time distortion anyway, just in terms of, you know, gravity wells and whatnot.
So in the 30 seconds, they were shot. They're saying in those 30 seconds, they entered that wormhole and came out. For the rest of the universe, it was a day later.
But is it 2 days now? Because they lose a day originally.
Yeah.
Then they spend a day faffing and trying to get stuff. Data.
What was that word?
Faffin.
Faffin?
Faffin, yeah. Messing around.
Faffin.
Faffin.
Never heard of that.
Okay.
Okay.
They spend the day, you know, chasing their own tail, basically. Faffin. Trying to figure out stuff from Data. Do they need another day after that or not? Because you're then into 3 days. Of which they've spent some of that time awake. So although that's, you know, you're put into stasis, your beard doesn't grow, but they've probably got at least a good like 12 hours worth of growth on them, mm-hmm. which they're going to have to delete. So I assume they went all back to shave.
Yeah, everybody had to shave, including the women.
Yeah. Change your underwear, also, change your socks.
You'd be hungry.
Yeah, well, you'd probably be eating throughout that time, though.
No, sure. But okay, well, what about Worf? Okay, right, so you're doing your job. You get knocked out, and then you have an entire day's worth of, you know, we have to chase Data around and so on, during which, you know, Worf manages to get rid of the particularly spicy burrito he had the night before. Then he gets his memory wiped. The burrito doesn't come out. The mystery is still there.
Yo, Blair's right about one thing. Everybody's got to do their laundry, or else they're going to have three-day-old underwear on.
And then Worf would find out where his burrito was.
Yeah, exactly. That's such a good point. All the meals that the replicator gave out over that time, there's a record they have to get rid of. Why is there only, you know, two dilithium crystals on hand when there should be three? We don't know why. There's a lot of things that has to be changed.
Yeah, they would have used... They would have used resources, right? You're not going to get the resources back.
Mm-mm.
So, you know, if you did have cake, then you've eaten the cake. You're not going to be able to get the cake back unless you replicate new cake. At which point, unless there's an infinite energy supply, you're going to notice that you've you've had cake.
I like your burrito analogy much better, though.
James. Yeah. Party Klingon burrito. There you go. But only if Alyssa could have actually went and did what Crusher wanted instead of having to do it herself. She never would have seen the Diomedian scoured moss. Although, is it possible that the moss could have found its way on the other side of the wormhole with the unanticipated side effect of growth?
Well, they probably could have explained that quite easily and just said, hey, this got time distorted as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's... And then she could just scrap the whole experiment and start from fresh, but...
By the way, it's probably not that many people like this as much as I do, but I love the theory that Data proposes in order to get the moss through. And I love the fact that Geordi shoots him down and says, you're talking nonsense. Because actually, what Data says kind of makes a little bit of sense, and what Geordi says also makes a lot of sense as well, and I just love the way that they did that. I think that I think there are analogies in kind of real world science where you can have these kind of theoretical arguments of one particular observation that's been made in a very very special case, and what Data is doing, he's extrapolating it up to real world scenarios, and Geordi shooting him down is great. I really did like that. I'm sure I've just said a whole load of nonsense, but let me give you an example, by the way. In quantum mechanics, you have this concept of probability wave functions. It basically tells you that you don't really know the position of anything, and there are, when you're measuring particles, you actually don't know where they are. There's a probability that they're actually on the moon. It's a very, very small probability, but it is a probability nonetheless. And I think that what Data was really doing, he was doing the analogous of saying, well, given that we know that we're made out of particles, and given that we know there's a probability density function associated with particles, then there's a probability that we're going to wake up on the moon tomorrow. And that's, some people say that, but it's not correct. But I like the fact that basically they kind of wrapped up something analogous to that in this episode. Anyway, sorry, that's a complete aside, and I understand that I was probably the only one tickled by it. Mm. Anyway.
Wake up on the moon tomorrow. Yeah. Sounds good. All right. Well, Picard pretends that he just got another perfectly sound explanation from Data. Tempest in the test tube after all. Mm. Hey, Data, why don't you leave the room so we can discuss this and talk to each other about why you're full of crap. Yes, sir. And he walks out of the room. And, if I was being sent out of the room and while I was walking out, they were perfectly silent, just waiting for him to leave the room. You know, Data's got to go, oh, crap, this is not going to be good. Maybe I should stand on the other side of the door and turn on my Android ears and see, get a feel for what's going on, but...
I just found for such a trusted officer who Picard goes to over anybody else, including Riker and Worf, they quickly caught on, and maybe, I know that's to help speed up the episode, but then that was such a blatant, Data, why don't you go help Ensign so-and-so, and we'll just stay here and continue our discussion, because apparently what you're saying is nonsense and crap, so, mm-hmm. but again, it has to move the plot along, and, I think maybe it would have been good had, as you said, he left the room, and then they show him standing outside the door, and kind of pondering what his next move would be. I think that would be interesting.
Yeah.
Well, I'm gonna suggest not at this stage, because let me just ask the question about: do people believe that Data is now obfuscated and deliberately going about? Trying to sort of throw them off the scent.
True. Yeah, I think at this point we're all we're just all wondering what's still going on. I don't think we were to know Data's involved. It's hard to say, though, because I'm looking back at this episode 25 years ago. I've seen it probably 25 times.
Yeah.
And it's hard to go back. But I just remember just watching Trek in general, wondering what was, you know, what is the mystery and can we solve it? So, yeah, I think we're not meant to know Data is doing something suspicious until we have this conversation after he leaves. Then the conversation now puts the target on Data's back.
It certainly puts the target on Data's back from the perspective of the crew. But I'm not sure whether the viewer is being put in a position where they have to like choose or have to like square that circle. You know, maybe I'm just too much of a Data like fan here, but I like the fact that they don't make it explicit that Data is doing something wrong until pretty late in the episode, or doing, you know, getting in the way until very late in the episode. I seem to remember by this point, you know, yes, you might get a little frustrated with Data. You think, well, you know, he's not exactly helping himself, but I wasn't here thinking he's actively, actively obfuscating an investigation or anything. But yeah, you know, I come with a lot of biases about being very pro Data, so. You know, maybe some people are ahead of me here.
All right. But now it's time to find the real story. Check the ship's chronometer. Check the transporter trace of poor Ensign Lachlan, who's probably scared that she's in trouble for something, getting called to sickbay. And as it turns out, her physiology is just a little off by about 24 hours. So, again, it could mean two things. Her cell structures are actually off by 24 hours, or Commander Riker got his hands on her and caused her to miss a whole day.
So I have a couple of problems here. One, I don't buy into this thing that Troy puts across as the internal clock and I can measure it. I'm not a big fan of that. But anyway, let me park that. If there is a 24-hour clock, then getting measured with a 24-hour gap, does that tell you anything? I mean, it's not a 24-hour clock if you can detect the difference between now and 24 hours in the future. It would have to be a clock of a longer period than that.
26 hours, maybe?
Yeah, it would have to be 26 hours at least. the main thing here is that what did the stasis do? So the stasis seemed to like selectively prevent beards growing and maybe even pushed a bit of beard back into the face. But didn't stop the internal clock we see majig or the transporter trace? I didn't get it.
I took it as the crew were actually out for 30 seconds. As soon as Data realized they were incapacitated, he did the emergency procedures and they all woke up. So they were awake for the 24 hours. They lived through the 24 hours. They redid the ship's chronometer, everything except for the Moss and Data and Worf's wrist, and then they knocked him back out for 30 more seconds and brought him back in. So I'd say out of the entire 24 hours, only 1 minute was when they were actually passed out. I didn't get stasis, really.
But what about the beard? Missed it.
Because they shaved during that 24 hours.
Well, keep in mind, though, that the stasis was originally designed to only keep them out for 30 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
It was when the aliens looked closer at the ship and realized, ah, crap, we didn't get everybody. Then that's when, you know, they spent the next couple of days. But technically, a 30-second stasis in reality would have been just fine. No one would have known any the wiser had it worked as it should have.
Right, but because he resisted. So now they have to try and go back to what they were doing before that 24 hours. And like I said, they see the stubble on their face. We got to shave it down to what we were yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Or another thing is, in 24 hours, I hardly grow anything. So I wouldn't even really notice.
Yeah, no, there's people that can grow a beard by the end of the day. So.
Oh, wow. Yeah, no, I got baby face. Okay. So there's good news and there's bad news. The ship's chronometer has been tampered. And that is the good news, actually. The bad news is that Data and LaForge are the only ones aboard the ship capable of doing it. So finally, Data isn't the only suspect in this mystery. Which, if you think about it, it probably was LaForge that redid the ship's chronometer. So really, he was guilty of that.
Well, but everyone just trusts LaForge.
Oh, of course. Oh, little Geordi. Who doesn't like little Geordi? So Deanna...
It's a good thing he didn't fall into the warp core when during that 30 seconds, or that would have been a little bit of a harder explanation. You know, standing on a ladder fixing a light bulb above the warp core, and he passes out, falls to his death. And
yeah, he's not smart enough to wear a safety harness, is he? No. Or he was wearing a safety harness, but the rope was hanging, sitting down by his foot. Whatever. So Deanna walks into her quarters, looks into the mirror, and does what we all do, freak out.
Okay, I was a little... that's the overacting there. Not a yes. Big fan of that.
Uh-huh, absolutely. She definitely has been watching too much Captain Kirk.
And my question here, and now I'm not sure, because I've seen it done both ways, so Worf leaves her quarters and is walking down the hall, hears her scream. He runs back to the door, taps his communicator, and says, "Security, override, blah, blah, blah." So some security Joe sitting in a security office hears Worf asking for the door to be override. Okay, I got to... Okay, Deanna Troi, what room is she in? Okay, there it is. There's the access code. Hit enter. Normally, don't they always say computer override, you know, security clearance, blah, blah, blah?
Well, excuse me. No, I think what that's happening, he taps his badge, doesn't he?
Oh, he does, but it sounds like he's talking to security as opposed to the computer.
No, I think that's the computer listening to his comm badge, and his order is to security override. He's telling the computer security override. I don't think he was really calling security. Doc, what about you? You can be the tiebreaker.
Yeah, I think he calls security, mm-hmm. and then... when the security get the message, then they ask the computer. So I think he's really just deferring to one of his delegates because he can and he feels powerful.
Okay. Or maybe that same guy in security has been opening Deanna's quarters for so many years that he knows exactly where it's at.
Yeah. It's on his favorites list.
So Worf knows he's got people working for him that can get Deanna's doors open quicker than the computer can.
Yeah.
Wait, not Worf. It's for Riker. Yes, the security guy has one icon on his Windows desktop, and that one is Deanna's doors. Click Deanna's doors, and poof, there they open. Okay. So she looked in the mirror and she didn't like what she saw. But yeah, and like you say, it was overacting, way overacting. I looked in the mirror, and it was like a stranger looked back at me from behind my own eyes.
It didn't bother me, by the way.
Really?
Yeah. I'm a useless apologist.
My face was a mask. Yes, her face is a mask. So, poor Worf. Why would his wrist hurt so much anyway if it was repaired? Or was I right? You know, Crusher just can't do that right either.
Worf is a wuss.
Hmm?
So, Worf is a wuss. He's a wuss.
Oh. Okay. That explains that. Okay, the planet in question... The planet they showed, the frozen green planet, is actually Tethys 3, which is hundreds of light years away. Is that a real planet?
Sitting
right next to Romulus. Between Romulus and Endor, Endoria. Okay.
When you say real, what do you mean?
Well, I don't know. Like Wolf 359. I always thought that was something made up.
No. So the thing is that... So here's a simple... In general, we haven't... okay, we have. But by this point in the production, we haven't discovered other planets around other solar systems. So unless it's one of the nine, if you were still counting Pluto, which you were at that point, planets, then it's made up.
Do you think Pluto will ever return to its glory days as a planet?
Do you know what? I hope so. I think what we should do, we should make our way out of Pluto and start building it up. Like, you know, just start adding stuff to it. I think I'm a big fan of Pluto being a planet.
Oh. And if it's inhabited, what will the species be?
Andorian.
Oh, dogs! It's a dog planet. Dog running planet, you know? Pluto. Get it?
Oh.
When the show comes to a screeching halt. Okay, but we already discussed that Worf had a broken wrist and only Data and a few others could do it. The real planet is actually Class M. Oh, no. Before that, I actually liked the back and forth between Picard and Data. You know, where Data is actually willing to sacrifice his career to protect the ship. But one thing I didn't get is why would Starfleet most likely strip him down to his wires to find out what the hell has gone wrong? To me, that sounds very much like a death sentence. And there's no such thing unless you go to forbidden planets.
I thought he was right. You know, if they were found Data to be lying and, you know, did his program get corrupt, they wouldn't have been able to trust him again. I think they would have stripped him down. They would have brought in Bruce Maddox again and he would have had his way with Data. I thought Picard was spot on with that. Hmm. And if in actual fact, you really see Picard as the guy solving everything as it goes on. You know, I think he probably should have clued in a little sooner that Data was probably lying for their benefit. But I still liked how Picard was putting everything together. And I'm not a huge Data fan, but I certainly like how Data was giving answers. Weren't really lies, but you know, you kind of alluded it to it before, James. It just wasn't really lies, but it wasn't really the truth. It was just complete deflection, and I did like that aspect until finally Picard started asking direct questions, and he had no choice but to say, "I'm just not going to tell you."
Okay, what if Riker were the suspect here? What would they have done to him? Put him in prison? Boot him out of the Starfleet? But they wouldn't kill him.
Falcon mind meld.
Maybe. Maybe, unless...
Yeah, hang on, so I think Vulcan mind meld is a very good counterexample here. We've had Starfleet officers being subjected to forced mind melds before.
Mm-hmm.
And is stripping Data down to his wires, which I'm sure he doesn't have wires... but is it stripping him down and trying to get the data out of him? Is it just not the equivalent of a mind meld?
Mm-hmm. To me, stripping him down to his wires means they're going to tear him apart, which means death.
I think it's turn him off and you know, do a download. Sure, of some mean, sort.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm sure he didn't mean he's going to take his legs off and you know. Try and cut them up into small pieces. I'm sure it was just a really turn of phrase rather than anything else.
Okay.
But by this point, we found out that there's nothing wrong with Data, right? So LaForge has done his full examination and everything is fine. So we know that Data's not mechanically at fault.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But the only thing we're going to do to solve this mystery is go back to the planet, so let's go. And when they get there, they find, hey, guess what? It is Class M, just like the sensors indicated. But as they approach, we get this energy field that takes over Deanna.
Now, my question is, were these aliens in a humanoid form? Because they don't need a Class M planet if they're just a gaseous type of entity. He didn't really get into that.
Really? So, right, why would they have a Class M planet?
Yeah, they don't need to, unless that's just a planet they happen to inhabit, and it could support their life as well as other life forms, but they didn't really get into the, you know, was this a, I don't know, were they humanoid and just able to, you know, go into a gaseous form at times to take people over. I'm not really sure, but again, at this point, I'm willing to go with a lot of it. It's been a good episode. It's been keeping me guessing, you know, relatively speaking, outside of it being 25-year-old episode. At the time, it was still keeping me guessing. It was, okay, now Data's has done something, but why now? What really happened when they were out for 30 seconds? You know, obviously the ship was in danger, but what type of danger was it? You know, I'm still willing to go with it, and I want to know what's really going on, and ready to go along for the ride at this point.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And it turns out the species are known as the Paxans, a xenophobic species that will destroy anyone who learns of their existence. Most ships, they just get trapped, they stun them, send them along, wake them up, and they count their blessings and move on, like Wrecker says. But not this time.
By the way, am I the only person that thinks it's quite ironic that given that they're so xenophobic and will destroy anything that is not them, they actually have a name for themselves to be referred to in the third person?
Yeah. Yeah. We don't have a name. You don't need to know our name. Just know that we don't want to... Yeah. It's better you don't know our name.
But it makes no sense. If you're not going to interact with anyone, why would you have a name by someone can call you? Anyway, just a small nitpick there.
All right. But Data realized they were all incapacitated and did emergency plan ZZ Alpha, whatever that was. Rotate their ship's shields, I guess. I don't know. But the alien takes possession of Deanna, who happens to be in bed at the time. Seems like the best possessions of her happen in bed.
I'm not going there.
Well, she got pregnant in bed.
Most people get pregnant in bed.
But not by themselves.
It's that damn security officer again opening the door for people.
Yeah, that's exactly. Oh, let's see here. They took possession of Deanna, allowed them to talk to the crew, and a compromise is struck. All records of their existence would be erased, and Deanna broke Worf's wrist. So now we know who broke the Klingon's wrist.
And I'm glad they showed it, though. I'm glad they went back in time as opposed to just telling us what happened. I think it it just... I liked how they did that aspect, because other episodes they just say, oh, well, here's what happened, blah, blah, blah. You know, they explain, you know, we get to see a visual of what really happened and Data taking command of the ship, and I like that aspect.
Right. And the compromise was erase everyone's memory and order Data never to reveal what has happened. Unless, of course, a compromise doesn't work, and then you have to reveal what happened to me, even though I told you never reveal what happened to even myself. But he does. So did Data disobey the order, or should he have kept on with... I cannot say. The gig is up. Might as well come clean. What?
I think he realized that was the end result. His, by the gig is up and admitting it, I'm still actually... the spirit of Captain Picard's orders are still being carried out by keeping everyone safe.
Okay. So the
I think Data should have probably said that earlier. You know, Captain Picard, we need to have a chat. You know, in private, just the two of us.
That's
just say, listen, you know what? You were the one that ordered me, and you ordered me for a very special reason. The ship is in danger if we go back, and you gave me a specific order. Let's just leave it at that. And if Picard was worth his salt, you know, he would probably...
I don't know about
that. Sit long and hard and think about it.
Maybe Picard might, but that's awfully questionable because there's always going to be some doubt. And as long as there's any doubt at all, you'll never know if you've really got the truth.
True. But yeah, they are right there.
I'm going to agree with Blair here. I do think that this entire episode basically is Picard doesn't know when enough is enough. Right? It's like a little child saying, oh no, don't go and play at the bottom of the garden. Oh, but I want to. No, it's bad, dangerous. You know, he should be old enough and he should be wise enough to have been able to respect the fact if Data had come to him and said, look, you know, you can't do this. And I would imagine that would be the end of the episode. I think this idea when Picard puts across, oh, but there are these clues, and when we have clues, we just can't say, you know, we can't control ourselves, and you know, we have to go and figure it out. At that point, he risks them saying, well, if that's true, your entire species is a threat. So
that's right.
You know, we're going to come and wipe you out next Tuesday.
Right. That's exactly. So do you still agree with Blair? Because you just kind of mentioned what I said. There's no way to get around the clues. You have to solve it. So
I don't think you, I think anyone that reaches kind of like a mature age should be able to control themselves.
So you think Picard would have said, thank you for telling me, we'll leave this alone forever now?
I would like to believe he could do that. Okay. He's a patient man.
The only aspect to counter that argument, and I know it's my own argument, is unfortunately the whole bridge crew is now looking into it. And if Picard walks out of his ready room after having a meeting with Data and says, okay, we're done. Now all of a sudden Picard's the suspect. But, you know, it's... And then they get assimilated by the Borg, and now the Borg know who they are. Yeah, I don't know. But I still think I think Data, had he done that approach the minute he started cluing in, that maybe it could have prevented a lot more hassle type thing.
Maybe Data should have given the Dominion the names of the Paxons, and hey, you may not want to go visit that planet if you want to get some. They're going to come after you.
Yeah.
All right. Well, although I'd still like to see Dominion versus Borg. We got cheated there, didn't we? Okay. I'm sorry, James, were you going to say something?
No, we didn't get cheated. We didn't. We didn't need to see Dominion versus Borg.
I think you're the only one that might agree to that.
No, because you know, what's the best that can happen? I mean, really, what's the best? I don't think it would have worked as well as people hoped. Although like a Borg queen shapeshifter person, it would have been cool, but it's too much good stuff.
Okay,
that they could have ruined, and then it's better to keep in our imagination, I think, of what could have been instead of ruining it by doing it.
Okay, well, I would argue with you, James, but I know how you'll get. You know, like when you was arguing about the absence of Zero or something like that. I don't know. I was definitely was losing my. I'm like, okay, I'm going to let that one go. Time to go now, James. That's a story I'll tell offline. So the orders are Geordi reconfigure the clock. Number one, oversee the rest of the ship. And this time, tell Dr. Crusher to kill that damn Moss. No, that's not what he says. Well, in a sense, he does say that, because, you know, let's get it right. The way they do that is kill the Moss.
Yeah, pretty much throw it in the garbage, and like you said, Lou, start it up again.
Yeah, somebody's going to find it in the garbage. No, it's got to be destroyed. Or eaten, I guess. I don't know. What do they do with the diamond? Smoke it, I guess. There you go. Why are we stoned, Captain? So Data once again says it's 30 seconds have passed. And again, like I said, they won't realize that the rest of the universe is 2 days ahead because they went through the wormhole. But I guess now, not only is it 2 days, if it took another 24 hours, but how many days during the investigation? What if it was 3 days? So now they have to account for 5 days loss.
They did say, I think, you know, James kind of mentioned it with time distortions and all that kind of stuff. I guess it's easily explained away. And I thought James made a great point earlier. At the end here, I'm thinking, oh my God, Data's using the exact same thing he did the first time. Like, is he a doofus? Come on, like, come up with a better idea where they're not going to get their interest piqued. You know, it didn't work the first time. Why go back to the well? But I really liked how James explained it. And how he basically said, you know, there's tension now because, oh, we're going down the same route again. It's all the same lines from the opening act. And whereas when it was first said, there was no tension and it was just run-of-the-mill dialogue, where now this same dialogue takes on a much better meaning. So I definitely appreciated it after hearing James' perspective.
And when you do watch it, you're watching for Picard's you know, reaction. You're watching for Picard to say, I think we should go back. And he doesn't say it. And you can almost see that Data is kind of relieved when, mm-hmm. when you know, they bite again and they head off on what the plan was going to be all along. Actually, let me also, I'm going to give a good thumbs up out there for the fact that they tried something. It 99% worked, but there's one little thing that made it not work, so they try it again. Now, you know, had the Borg followed through with that, like they sent a single ship, it just got through, but then it got blown up, so it was another ship the following week, and then one the following week after that. A lot of the people can learn from this kind of approach. I think far too often, and in particular, like bad guys are foiled with one little thing that is very, very, you know, that happens to be all the ducks line up in a row, which means a very specific thing prevents them from winning, and they never try again. And I like the fact that at least Picard says, well, let's try again.
Right. But there was a subtle difference the second time. On the first time, Data's the one that suggested we send a probe. The second time, it was Riker and Data saying, yeah, that might be a good idea. I guess we could, yeah, let's try that. Or did you guys notice that?
Yeah, now that you mention it, yeah, you're right. It was,
Yep. So as long as it came from somebody else, it's off of Data now. But the hazard advisory to Starfleet... They're going to put on a hazard advisory. Don't you think that might bring a little unwanted attention? What are they going to put in this hazard advisory? Don't go to this near this wormhole.
Yeah.
Yeah, under punishment of death.
Yes.
So you should not visit Talos IV or this wormhole.
Or this wormhole. I mean, the advisory is going to bring some unwanted attention when the Ferengi hear about it or...
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes. I could just imagine that the list that they keep of forbidden planets, Talos IV, then Genesis, and then Genesis scribbled out after it blew up. And then this place, you think, it's kind of, it's really not the place that you want. You don't want to end up on the secret list of things you shouldn't visit.
Mm-hmm. So don't ever go there again. Okay, I don't think I have anything more here. Boys?
Nope, I'm good too.
Go for me.
Okay then. Well, I guess it's now time for our final thoughts and ratings on this episode on a scale of 1 to 5, with 1 being the worst and 5 being it, I guess. The best. Blair, why don't you go first as our guest?
Sure. As I indicated in the beginning, I really like this episode. This is Star Trek at, you know, I don't want to say at its best because I don't think it's a 5-star episode, but it's pretty close. It's like your apple pie. I felt so comfortable watching this episode. It's like, yes, this is why I fell in love with the series. I loved how everyone was involved in it. Would have liked to have seen Guinan play a little bit more of a role and maybe drop the whole clues reference over and over and over again, but I really liked it. I liked the mystery. If I recall correctly, I was still wondering what was happening, or you know, what was really going on, and then it would switch to why is Data lying, and then it would switch to he lied for a good reason. How are they going to fix this now? I just thought it progressed quite well. So to me, like I said, this is great Trek again, and yeah, I would give this a 4.5 clues instead of stars.
I'm sorry, is that all you're going to say? Just 4.5 clues? No. I know you're not Chris or anything, but...
No, that's it. Yeah, no long-winded alliteration.
All right, well, we have Chris on for Cupid, so hopefully he'll have something for us then. Okay, let's see, 4.5. Okay, Doc, what about you?
Okay, this episode's great. I really enjoyed it. I remember enjoying it when I first watched it. I love the fact that they can, like, turn Data bad, really, without turning Data bad, but it's just you're on the wrong side of Data. I like the mystery. I like how the mystery is solved. I think this is a great, great little episode when I think everything's kind of like, you know, firing on all cylinders. I think that the Picard Data interactions are great. This is a tricky one to rate, though, because because I don't do half points, and I do think it is a very, very, very good episode. I really like it. But what I've found recently, I think I'm giving too many things fives because there are too many things that are good. And I'm beginning to think that I should perhaps introduce a six out of five to my rating for the really, really, really great episodes like, you know, Yesterday's Enterprise and Best of Both Worlds and such. But I think that would be cheating. This is going to be bad of me. I think that I'm going to have to give it a four because I think my fives are just getting too, you know, there's too much stuff up there. This is a great episode of Trek. I always consider my four to be two thumbs up, and this is certainly like, you know, a great solid, you know, TNG as it's kind of hitting all of the right notes episode. A little insubstantial in terms of what it does, and of course they, you know, they effectively reset the thing by the end of the episode, but whilst you're, you know, whilst you're on the ride, it's great. So 4 out of 5 for me.
Okay. All right. I kind of think the same thing as you, James. It's kind of, it is a very high marked episode. It probably does deserve a 5. But I'm not sure what really could give it a 5. But I'm not exactly sure what would give it a 4 either. So I'm a little tossed. I mentioned this type of stuff before, but I never really talked about why I rate the fives episodes when I do. And a lot of it depends on if I'm willing to take the episode on a car ride with me, and I've said that before. Anytime I do a long-distance ride, I take Star Trek along the way. I like to listen to Star Trek. And so, but this is one that I do take with me. I do love this episode. It's got the chops for a 5, but yet I always take it with me. I love a good mystery. The holodeck scene was hilarious from start to end. Even if I, you know, poke a little fun once in a while during the review, the episode is still brilliant. How would Data handle such an order? What were to happen 25 years down the road if he decides to talk about the events, or would he classify this particular event as classified to where he can't even look into the file himself any longer? That's an interesting point in and of itself. We never discussed how will Data do this. Will he know of the events, or will he find a way to classify it to where he can't even touch it? Let's see. I guess that's pretty much all I have. So I'm very, very confused. I want to give it a 5, but I don't think it quite fits the 5. So I agree with Blair's 4.5.
By the way, thinking about it a bit more, I think this is like, you know, your favorite like fast food like restaurant, or your favorite, one of your favorite like a particular type of cuisines that isn't like extremely high cuisine. You know that it's not fantastic, but it does everything right that it sets out to do.
Right.
Does that make sense?
It did.
Absolutely. Yes. Like apple pie. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's good.
Actually, yeah, sorry, Blair. You already had the apple pie thing in there.
Thanks for listening, James.
It's just that we don't have... I'm not actually that keen on apple pie.
Oh, all right.
I don't think we have the apple pie culture like the Americans.
Oh, no. No, probably not.
Had you said sticky toffee pudding, then perhaps... perhaps things would have been different.
Oh, sorry.
Oh, God. Yeah, or crumpets.
Crumpet.
You know, poor James. Poor James. He actually brought me crumpets. But every time during the Las Vegas thing, at the end of the day, it's 4 a.m. in his brain. It's just too late to do anything else. And we kept forgetting to grab those crumpets. And so they eventually expired and didn't look good. So,
Lou, hang on. Let me just point out that not only did I bring you crumpets, I had to talk my way past a U.S. immigration guard whilst I had my crumpets on me, and I had to declare them as I'm bringing this food stuff into your country. It's not the easiest thing to explain what exactly these things are, and they look at you like you're a lunatic. So yeah, I managed to get crumpets across and past the border control. Oh, no mean feat.
Amazing, and it still didn't get to him. Oh, I felt like crap about that.
I think we did need a toaster. Like, we didn't have a toaster.
Oh no, no, we wouldn't have had a toaster. And I don't think the casino was willing to take a crumpet into their kitchen and toast it for us. So if it wouldn't have gone on the bus with me, I guess it wouldn't have done any good. But I mean, who makes crumpets that are only good for a week?
It's like bread. Bread's not good for more than a week, right?
I guess. Well, some with preservatives, you know, maybe. But my, you know, like muffins here, I mean, they sit on the store shelves longer than a few days, I would imagine. But I don't know. But okay, all right. Well, anyway, that's the end of that. Blair, let me, as I said, I don't have you anywhere else for the rest of the season.
Oh, I did my two appearances. I did your first one and that, but I will look forward to season 5. I kind of like to come on once or twice a season, so mm-hmm. I'll have to take a look at the list and let you know.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that I'm scheduled for UP2 at some point.
You are. I was just looking at that. September 25th is our recording day.
Really? Okay. Have you made
yes.
it?
What am I?
Go ahead. What, James?
Sorry, I was just trying to remember what I was coming on for.
You are coming on for Family Business.
That's good.
Because we had scheduling issues with the good episodes that we were going to have you on earlier, so...
There's nothing wrong with Family Business.
Oh, trust me, there's a lot of Ferengi fans on UP2 now, so...
Yes.
I mean, in fairness, I haven't seen the episode in maybe a decade. Actually, I don't think that's true, because I've got a 12-year-old in the house. It's at least 15 years.
Okay. Well, yeah. How about Rejoined?
Yeah, I got your email. I haven't even started season 4 yet.
All
so
right.
I have it scheduled away for booked for you there, Lou. So
when does the Magnificent Ferengi come on?
I think that's either 6 or 7. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, I'll be looking forward to that.
It's a ways away.
I'll be looking for that. Okay.
But Luke, you asked for Rejoin because you like Rejoin?
Oh, do I really tip my hat off?
Oh, okay, let me tip my hat. I can't stand a lot of the Jadzia-centric true episodes. I find them a bore. I find the one where she has to have discussions with her previous lives boring. I find the stuff about the old murderer boring. Meridian is nonsense. I don't understand why people like Jadzia. I'm gonna get hate mail.
Well, you may want to keep those discussions if you come on UP2 to yourself, because there's a few Jadzia lovers. Although I must admit, I love the character. I think some of her episodes aren't that great as well. So
I think Jadzia-centric is not necessarily a good thing. I think as a character she's fine, but the centric episodes are a bit.
I can't disagree. They have some crummy ones, but I'm looking at your season 5, Lou, and I see a few that once we get offline, I'll throw out a couple, and you can let me know if they're available.
Okay, all right. The reason I am interested in Rejoined is I have a problem with the way TNG handled the host.
And you feel they made up for it in this episode?
I do. And when I get to the host, you're going to find out why I have a problem with it. And if I get on Rejoined, you're going to find out why I believe that they did the right thing this time.
That was the Borg Queen she was with, too, if you weren't aware of that.
In Rejoined?
Yeah.
Oh, yes, nice.
The actress is the second Borg Queen, not the
second Borg Queen. Yeah.
Where is the host, James?
Season 4.
Here it is. Yeah, okay.
Season 4?
Yeah, it is coming up. All right, we have Mark on for that one. But yeah, so that and obviously you're going to be able, you know instantly why I don't like the one, but I like the other. So there you go. All right then, Blair, thank you for coming on again, and hopefully you'll be okay going to work.
Yeah, well, thank you very much. I appreciate working our schedules around to accommodate me, because I did want to come on for this one. And yeah, it's great to be back on the Battle Bridge and TNG. Although DS9's my favorite series, this is my close second, and it's my apple pie of Star Trek.
And one of the things I'm guilty of not doing that I really should is giving the guest a chance to talk about themselves and what. Now, you are on Upper Pylon 2, so I obviously put a link in the show notes, which seems like I talk about UP2 a lot, and so it's usually always in the show notes. But where can people find you if you would want them to start stalking you?
Well, I'm on the forums, the TrekMate forums, and I post occasionally there. I also have a Twitter account. It's at medic1849, and I'm more of a follower than a tweeter, but occasionally I do throw out the odd tweet. So yeah, if you want to follow me there, you can, and you know, I'll follow you back. So
there you go. All right, at medic1849. Is there a significance to 1849, or is that what they assigned you?
No. It's a number from years ago that had a, yeah, it does have significance, yes. So.
And I believe James was trying to say, that's up before. I could ask that again and still not remember.
That's okay.
So chances are in season 5, I'm going to ask you one more time.
Sure.
All right, thanks a lot, bud.
Stranded on an alien planet.
We have captured one of their spies.
A case of mistaken identity endangers Riker's life.
I have to get back on my ship.
And survival lies in the hands of the enemy.
Stop him! He's escaping!
Will you release my officer?
We're not giving him back.
I believe that Riker will not survive the day.
Starfleet Crisis on Star Trek The Next Generation.
All right, so everyone, why don't you join us next week as we review episode 15 of season 4, and that will be First Contact. And this time we'll have Mark Stamper and Data Logan on, and I'm hoping for Data Logan. We haven't heard from Data Logan for a long time. Has anybody heard from Data Logan recently?
He's posting the odd stuff on the forums, but he has been a little quiet.
All right. Well, he had asked for this, and he sent it to the Battlebridge email that doesn't get checked very often, which my fault for doing. And then Mark had already asked for it as well, so that's the time when I'm going to just have to have both of them on to cover for my own mistake. So take care, everyone, and good night.
Good night.
Good night, everyone.
All right.